You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Welcome into the QB SCO show. This is episode 34, brought to you by the fine folk at SB Nation and Bleeding Green Nation. I am your host, Michael Kist. You can follow me on Twitter at Michael Kist NFL. That's K-I-S-T. And as always, here to join me to talk about the upcoming enemy quarterback for the Philadelphia Eagles. He is quarterback one in my heart, Mark Schofield. Follow him on Twitter at Mark Schofield. Follow him over at Pat's Pulpit, because he's doing great work on the SB Nation podcast family over there as well. Mark, Week 3 is mostly in the books. How you doing, brother?
I'm doing well, buddy. Week 3, a strange one. I know we're going to get into some of it. Some people might be taking some L's, myself included. Never fun to do that. But doing well. I did have a historical reference kind of queued up, but I'm going to wait on it. I'm holding it up for the viewers on News Channel 8, The Histories by Herodotus, which my boy Michael Kist, his reaction to what I'm showing everybody, leads me to believe that he knows this work, and he should, because he recommended it to me.
You've got the Tom Holland translation, which is the one that I recommended to use, my favorite translation of that book, and it's a massive tomb of a book. It's a doorstop.
It is. It's like a brick here, and mostly because we had a gentle listener suggest that he'd love to hear us. This was it. A tweet from Zach Feldman, who was at Feldman, F-E-L-D-M-A-N underscore Zach, Z-A-C-H. It would be super cool if y'all compared Alexander the Great and Tom Brady on the next QB SCO show. And I was going to go into that, but I thought, wait, this is a trap, right? It's that meme. This is a trap, because here's an Eagles fan asking me to compare Alexander the Great and Tom Brady on a show for an Eagles podcast network. So I thought, I'm going to reset this. So I'm going to do a little bit more research. So I'm going to step back here, and I'm not dropping a historical reference this week.
So I'm going to do it. And I'm
there. We go.
It's a quick quote that I'm going to do. But I will say, if you're looking for a correlation between Tom Brady and Alexander the Great, you should look into the correlation between Bill Belichick and Alexander the Great's father, Philip, who really kind of reinvented what the Macedonian army was. So that's a good one. That's a good place to start.
That was one of the places I was probably going to go, but I need to do more research. It's a short week here, so we got to condense the game plan, so to speak.
Yeah, that's true. Definitely true. As the Eagles are coming off the heels of a 27-24 devastating loss to the Lions, and we have the Green Bay Packers coming up on Thursday night. So it is a short week, so we wanted to get this in early, and we'll get right into it, man. Like, Aaron Rodgers, for me, is a bit of a polarizing figure now, after years of enjoying top two status with the aforementioned Tom Brady. And for a while, you could argue for either being the best quarterback in the NFL. Obviously, different play styles, overall results, but those were serious debates that we were having. And the last few years have not been all roses for Aaron Rodgers. Things got weird between him and Mike McCarthy, and blame was placed in different directions by various actors in the widely publicized drama in Green Bay. And now he's operating under new head coach Matt LaFleur. And before we get into the specifics of his game, I wanted to ask you, is this recent downturn of consensus opinion on Aaron Rodgers a case of something akin to Mark Twain's quote of, "The reports of my death are greatly exaggerated"?
Oh, I like the way you did that. Although, for the most part, I think the reports of Rodgers' steep decline are exaggerated. But there are numbers to back it up. You look at a lot of different passing metrics, and you can make the case that he's more on par with the Andy Daltons of the world than the Tom Brady's and Matt Ryan's, and certainly the Patrick Mahomes of the world. I mean, you've seen a drop off in, you know, just net yards per attempt, a number of different passing metrics. But part of that, I think, was in a sense scheme related. Mike McCarthy was an offensive innovator when he came to the league. He was using shotgun more than anybody. He was using motion more than anybody. He stayed the same. The rest of the league sort of passed him by. Like, he was using motion, I think, on 30% of snaps when he came into the league, which was unheard of when he was doing it. Now that's like, it's like you're not even, it's like the Cleveland Browns on Sunday night. You're not moving anybody, basically. Yeah. And so, you know, the offense sort of passed McCarthy by, in a sense, but he was rigid in what he wanted to do. that played into a lot of Aaron Rodgers' decline over the past couple of years. What's been interesting, we're going to get into Matt LaFleur in a second. I do like a lot of what they're doing conceptually, but I think we might have a Matt Nagy situation starting to unfold before our very eyes.
Oh, boy. Because we talked about Matt Nagy.
We just crushed him last week.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, we kind of took him to task because, like I said, I regretted calling Matt Nagy great in the offseason because what we've seen from that offense, even with Trubisky at quarterback, mediocre Mitch, has not been fantastic. So I'm interested to hear your thoughts on the overall scheme. First, let's talk a little bit more about Aaron Rodgers. And just as a qualifier, we are going to talk about some Carson Wentz and his week 3 performance later on in the show. But keeping it with Rodgers here, like, here are some of the things that I saw when I watched him in week 3. Just got done watching their game with the Denver Broncos. Packers now move to 3-0. Some of the major notes, like, he still has one of the best hard counts in the game. It's almost too good at times because there were a couple of false starts on the Packers offensive line early in that game. Obviously, the ability to create out of structure and on the run is still there. Again, maybe a little bit too much there because he likes to really freelance and do all those things, but I'll leave that to you, the expert. I did like the use of tempo. They tried to go tempo early, but some penalties kind of offset that. He still got the back shoulder throws that kind of defined his season when they made that little Super Bowl run there way back. I really enjoyed the fullback wheel to the fullback, Danny Vitale. That was a near touchdown. So I did enjoy that from a scheme perspective. But I also saw a lot of frustration from him in the third quarter where it feels like he was not in sync with LaFleur and the game plan, or it just wasn't working for either of them or one of them. What did you feel overall about that week 3 performance and maybe some of those frustrations that kind of popped up later in the game?
And that's kind of where I was going with the Matt Nagy comparison, Mike, because the past 2 weeks, they've started extremely well. I mean, their first drive against Minnesota in week 2 was an absolute thing of schematic beauty. They had sort of that burner concept that we see from a Kyle Shanahan offense, and this is the week 2 game. It was the very first play of the game where it looks like it's going to be Yankee, but that deep over route then breaks back to the outside, which is a beautiful design. Then they follow that up with a sort of tear motion to the left with the running back. They show screen that way. Everybody's flowing to that side of the field. Then you come back with a dump off running back screen to the right. That was a thing of beauty, stringing some of those plays together. And you saw it again early in this game in week 3. They come out with 21 personnel on their first drive play action. He's able to create, hits the tight end in the flat, the hard count, get the defense to jump, then you get the deep post. Everybody froze deep post for a touchdown. They go tempo on their second drive, play action boot left with a flood concept. Then they come back against a three-man rush on 3rd and 15, which you probably shouldn't do because that plays into what Aaron Rodgers loves to do. It allows him to create and extend, keeps his eyes downfield. I hate using a three-man rush against Aaron Rodgers. I think it plays to what he wants to do to begin with. So I love the way the past couple of weeks they've started games, but it seems like they sort of get off script. And this was a knack on Nagy last year, was once he got off the scripted 15, then it's hard to become that play caller that like sets plays up and strings plays together. It's much easier when you do it in the offense on Friday afternoon, just put together the script. When you have to start doing it on the fly, that's when it gets tough. And that's an adjustment LaFleur needs to make. And I think that's where part of that sort of frustration with Rodgers was coming in during week 3. But the hard count stuff is hilarious. Did you see when their left tackle Bacardi jumped?
Yeah.
Did you see that? And Bradley Chubb was like shadow boxing on the other side of the line of scrimmage. It's like, dude, it's just a 5-yard false start. Yeah. Like, come on, man. But yeah, the hard counts, that's something you got to watch with him because he's going to use them all the time.
Looking at this matchup against the Eagles, and we'll kind of go into some different scheme things from the Packers, you know, something that I charted from last year from the Eagles, and the narrative is often incorrect, but the narrative is correct in this case, which is Jim Schwartz playing a lot of off coverage. Some of the games that I charted with similar middle of the field closed defenses, the average cushion for the Eagles was substantially larger. There were 3 opponents that I charted against: Houston, Minnesota, Dallas, and I had Denver, Seattle, and Washington as the comparison for defenses that also played those teams. Against Houston, Philadelphia, about 6 yards off. Against Minnesota, about 6 yards off. Against Dallas, 5.5 yards off. No other team Denver, Seattle, Washington played more than 4.3 yards off. Seattle was a little bit lower at 3 yards, but they use a lot of bail technique, so that kind of plays into those numbers. But my point is here, with a specific thing that the Packers like to do, they will take advantage of that outside cushion. And we've also talked about this on the Kist and Solak show. Schwartz wants to have 8 in the box, and the Eagles are fantastic against the run in part because of that, but it also doesn't allow those flat defenders to get out there in time, and it really leaves a void in that defense. And one thing that Favre and Rodgers have done in their careers is a little something, it's a little sneaky. You want to tell the listeners about it?
It's a little sneaky. It's a little sneaky here. It's the Favrean RPO. And I put together two clips from their game against Chicago on opening night where they've got run called. The first one, they're just on the outside of the run zone. It looks like they're going to go outside zone to the left. You've got a stacked box type of situation. And backside, you've got Davante Adams facing about an 8 yard cushion situation. I did it too. Rodgers takes this awkward drop from center and just throws a quick speed out to Adams on the backside. It's because if you've got 8 guys in the box against you and you've got a run play call, but you see 8 yards of cushion to your backside receiver, who's an extremely good receiver, why bang your head against the wall and run the football in that situation? Who cares if run play is called? Just throw it to him and you'll see the run block and develop. Later in that game, they had crack toss called to the left. This time they're in their own territory. But they've got, again, off coverage over MVS on the right. They just throw a smokescreen to him. Everybody's expecting crack toss. The running back runs through his crack toss steps. You get the receiver cracking inside, but he just takes it and throws it out there. The defender, I think it was Prince Amukamara in this case, comes down and makes a good tackle, prevents it from being a bigger gain. But this is what they're going to do. If you give him, and Schwartz has consistently done this, 6, 7, 8 yards of off coverage over their receivers and stack the box thinking you're going to stop the run, Rodgers is going to say, I don't care what we called in the huddle, I'm going to take what you're going to give me. This game doesn't have to be hard from an offensive perspective. So Schwartz might need to rethink that strategy going into this week. Otherwise, Rodgers is going to just keep taking those easy throws and turn it 1st and 10 into 2nd and 3 without having to like run into a stacked box.
So I'm looking at the Athletic article that kind of surveyed 55 different coaches and executives around the league. And what they said about Rodgers was interesting because, as I said before, the claims of my death, the reports of my death being greatly exaggerated within the league, among coordinators, among executives, Aaron Rodgers ranked as the number one quarterback, received 53 tier one votes, only 2 tier two votes. So it's interesting that the league still sees it. Like, one of the quotes is, quote, you see the body language and then you realize the heroics come when there is nothing to lose. So there's that hero ball mentality to Rodgers. We're not quite sure where to place the blame. Another guy said guys like Rodgers get canonized and put on a pedestal so high that it's hard for a coach to keep up. So there's that relationship with Rodgers, and there's always going to be that kind of butting in the head of head coach and Aaron Rodgers, especially with a young coach like LaFleur. Overall, we kind of documented the struggles that LaFleur might be having later on in games, but how do you see this relationship between LaFleur and Rodgers? Is it cohesive enough? Is it cohesive enough? Is it sustainable throughout the season?
I think so, because it seems like LaFleur has tapped into sort of Rodgers' creativity and his feel for the game. Like, we were just talking about some of those Favrean type RPOs, and he's given him the green light to do it. And on the first play that we broke down, the one down in the Chicago red zone, Rodgers is looking at LaFleur on the sideline before he does it. So it's almost as if he's like, look, we're on the same page here, right? And you could see that there's this sort of this like symbiotic relationship to it. So he's tapped into his creativity and has given him the freedom to do that in one sense. In another sense, the way he's done that, in that game against Denver, I charted a couple of different times, but they ran some variation of what we'll call 5-2-5 F-post, which is, you know, a basic sort of Coryell type concept. Aikman talks about it all the time. It was a Cowboy staple when Aikman was there, but they've allowed it to have more flexibility where it could be 9-2-9 where they're running go routes and he'll throw go routes. It could be 5-2-5 where they could run comebacks. It could be sort of a mix of that where he has the freedom to turn them into back shoulder throws. So again, it's a route concept that's called and you draw it up one way. But if Rodgers sees something or a leverage advantage, or if he and his receiver feel something, they can sort of expand the play call as it's called by the coach on the sidelines. And so LaFleur has part of these younger coaches that realize that there's more than one way to approach offensive football, and you have to have the fluidity in your offensive structure and in your designs to react to what the defense is doing. And he's tapped into that with Rodgers, who is doing this stuff anyway and wants to be that sort of creative, free spirit type of quarterback that Mike McCarthy didn't want to have running this offense. And so you put that together, it's allowed LaFleur and Rodgers, for the most part, I think, to be on the same page.
How wild is it that an Air Coryell staple like 525 F post
right
is still around in case
it's still, I mean, look, when you get play designs that work, yeah, you keep them in. It's like, look, Mills concept, that's a Steve Spurrier thing that he came up with for Ernie Mills because they ran it so often, and now everybody knows what Mills is. Everybody's running Mills. It's mesh. You know, that dates back to the 70s, you know. Now, how many times did the Eagles run mesh? How many times do the Patriots run? Like, everybody's running it now. If it works, you're going to find a way to get into the playbook. You might need to expand it and, you know, tweak it a bit. But if it works, it works.
So with what you know about the Eagles defense, how they've performed this season, and what you know of Aaron Rodgers and how he's performing right now, what he's capable of, you know, his ceiling, his floor, are you concerned for the Eagles defense coming into this matchup? Because they have been eaten up a little bit this season.
I think there's cause for concern, to put it mildly, going into this game. We just saw what Matthew Stafford did to them on Sunday, the defense struggled at times. Now, yes, there were some other things, a kickoff touchdown return and things like that, some fumbles and things like that. You know, but the Eagles have, you know, we saw what Case Keenum was doing to them early in the game. And I think that Washington offense, to their credit, Jay Gruden has done a good job. He's played to Keenum's strengths, but you've seen some of that. We've seen what Atlanta was able to do to them, you know, trying to, you know, Eagles had a chance to close out that game. The defense couldn't get it done. Now, I think, if you're Jim Schwartz, this is a big ask, but if you change the defensive alignments a bit, you could take away some of what they want to do. But I see you shaking your head.
What are you?
And I'm guessing we're not going to go down that road. So, yeah, there's some cause for concern here. Yeah.
Okay. So that's alarming. And, of course, we're going to continue to.
Happy Monday, kids.
We're going to continue to break down this Packers-Eagles matchup throughout the week on a short week, an abbreviated week here at BGN. When we come back here on the QB Sco Show, we're going to talk about some Carson Wentz and possibly some other quarterbacks around the league that Mark has watched. And that's up next here on the QB Sco Show. We'll be right back.
Vacations can be tricky. You already know how to book flights and hotels, but now the only thing you're missing is, you know, the actual travel experience. Because is it really a vacation if you're just sitting around like you would at home? You need a tool to get the most out of your time away. That's where Viator steps in. You can book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected. And 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hey, this is Scott Galloway, author, professor, entrepreneur, and most importantly, host of the Prop G podcast. We got a special series running on right now called The Future of Work, where I answer all your questions on, surprise, the future of work. Questions including, what are we missing when we work remotely? Or how do we handle work-life balance when a major opportunity comes knocking? From the provocative to the technical, we're offering insights you won't want to miss. So tune in to The Future of Work, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Canva. You can find it on the Prop G Pod wherever you get your podcasts.
And we are back on the QB Sco Show, episode 34, brought to you by SB Nation, Bleeding Green Nation, Michael Kist, here with QB1 in my heart, Mark Schofield. Mark, brother, I know you were watching the Carson Wentz performance from week 3 against the Lions this week. And let me tell you, drop, 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 and just not a whole lot of run support, to use a baseball term, from the supporting cast of the Philadelphia Eagles receiving options, which are currently depleted at the time. There were concerns about chemistry with some of the younger wide receivers, with Mac Hollins, J.J. Arcega-Whiteside, continue to do that. But what did you think overall from Wentz? Can you really ask for much more in a quarterback in that situation? Because I thought he played some winning football.
I thought he played a great game. And I was impressed. And actually, after I got done watching it, I had had this thought about his game and how his season has gone to date. And when I saw numbers to back it up, because I was impressed, you know, going through that game, how he fared on third down situations. And I saw somebody tweeted out today that of the 25, this is from Cody Swartz, of the 25 quarterbacks with at least 20 pass attempts on third down this year, Carson Wentz is fifth in passer rated, 127.7, and first in touchdown passes, 5. That's on third downs this year. And QB rated, yeah, it's a statistic. It's not the be-all and end-all of quarterback play, but I thought it was fantastic on third downs. I mean, you had the scramble where he picked up 16 early in the game. That was on a 3rd and 6. You had a 3rd and 7 in the second quarter, the 13-24 mark, where he had a fantastic throw on an out route to move the sticks there. They had a stop route to Aguilar on a 3rd and 6, also on that same drive along the left sideline. He was pressured, but puts it right on him, which is dropped. That was a drop there. I loved a 3rd and 3 play at the 7:43 mark of the second quarter. If you wanted to see Carson Wentz get faster with his mind, watch this play. It's a mirrored curl flat with a wide deep sit route over the middle. He reads it 1-2 on the left side, the flat to the curl. Both are covered. He comes to the curl on the right. That is covered. Then he throws his 4th option, which is the deep sit route to the tight end, and he sticks it in there for a first down. The next play, Sanders fumbles. They recover that one, but a couple of plays later, you get the Sanders fumble that's lost. That play on a 3rd and 3 situation was the play that I thought maybe is the best I've seen from Wentz this year in terms of that process and speed at the quarterback position, which is what I wanted to see from him this year. Get into his 4th read there. I loved seeing that play. So there was another example of it too, later in the game, sort of getting to late reads. I love the design, the 2nd and 8 in the 4th quarter at the 11-minute mark. Jet motion, 4 verticals with a halfback seam to Sanders. Mm. That's right out of the read to McVay, now to Doug Peterson school. You know, teams have been using that. That was a beautiful design. I liked when they went tempo. I was really impressed with what Wentz did. And like you said, look, you use the baseball analogy, run support. He didn't get a lot. I mean, it's like a pitcher going out and throwing a 12 strikeout, you know, 3 hit. You give a 1 run on a cheap loop single or something and you lose because you guys can't help you out.
You talked about earlier with Rodgers in the 3-man rush about that's something that you don't want to do. The Lions used a lot of 3-man rush against Wentz. Why do you think that is? Do you think that's something that other teams may have seen something? Maybe other teams will try to experiment with? I thought Wentz was a little shaky with his pocket movements with just the 3-man rush. So there's a little bit of a concern there. Benjamin Solek had pointed that out in the recap show. I agreed with him there. There's that clip of where Wentz breaks the pocket to the right on a 3-man protection. And there's a bunch of offensive linemen who think either the ball's already out or they don't know where the pocket is standing around. And it looks really bad. It looks like a Willie Beeman any given Sunday. They won't block for him kind of deal. Right. But I think that's a little bit overblown. But what did you see in that regard?
Yeah. And that clip you're talking about, it's hilarious. And people, the person that put it out, put it under the guy of, you know, he's getting his offensive line crushed. And it's like, it's 8 seconds into the play. I mean, what else are they going to do?
Yeah.
I think the decision there might be, look, if you're playing with backup receivers and guys that aren't experienced, you drop 8 into coverage, they're not going to have the feel for finding the soft spots and zones. You drop 8, they're not going to know exactly how to sit down or how to run to grass and things like that, the way that, you know, the Jeffries and the DeSean Jacksons of the world will. And so you take away those options and it has to force Carson Wentz to try to buy some time and hope somebody breaks free. It's sort of the flip side with Rodgers. You know, the reason why I don't like rushing 3 with him is because A, he's got receivers that will be able to find those zones, and B, he's so good at creating. Wentz is great at creating with his legs, but if the receivers aren't doing what they need to do against 8-man coverage schemes, it's not going to work.
Yeah. And they were doubling Ertz a lot too. And Ertz is probably the best receiver on that team of finding those open voids. Yep. So the Lions were like, hey, we're going to take away Ertz. We're going to make these other guys get open. We're only going to rush 3, and we'll see how it sorts out. So, yeah, I did like that game plan there from the Lions, a little bit unconventional, but I don't think they were going to get a pass rush anyway, so you might as well go the coverage route with it. Anything else from Wentz that you saw in the game? Any other observations, or maybe we can move on to some of the other quarterbacks that we saw this week, because there were some performances that I feel a little bit uncomfortable with bringing up here on the QB Sco show.
Yeah, I mean, we can duck that, and we can still come back to some of what, you know, Doug Peterson had done. Look, it was Ertz here who ran a Miami route, 1st and 10 at the 11:14 mark. I liked some of the 12 personnel stuff. You know, we thought that was going to be a big part of the game plan this year. They didn't get a chance to do it last week. They had some 12 personnel stuff, which was good. I loved when they went tempo. I thought when they went tempo, Wentz seemed comfortable. It seems like he has a really good feel at the line of scrimmage for sort of taking control of the offense. So I think they should try going tempo more, you know, whether they get the guys back or not, because I think that's a nice way to get Wentz comfortable and let him have some feel for what's happening at the line of scrimmage. And, you know, coming back on a short week, it might be a good thing to do that as well, because it was part of their game plan this week. It won't be a big lift to install it for, you know, this Thursday night game coming up.
One thing that surprised me, and I'm pulling up the stats right now because I charted this last night, but one thing that did surprise me, and I wonder your opinion on this, before the game, me and Benjamin Solak had argued for more play action from under center. The Eagles are actually a little bit better at it from shotgun, typically, just looking at the stats and whatnot. But this is what surprised me. In week two, we knew that the Eagles had to scrap a large menu of 12 personnel plays that also involved play action. So I understand that they only ran three play action plays in that game. In this game, only 16% play action. Now, they had three explosive plays of those seven, three explosive plays from play action, three of their four explosive plays in the game. They were 12.6 yards per play on play action. They took a sack, but they did also have a 57% success rate. So it was efficient, it was explosive. And I understand that Dallas Goedert is extremely limited in this game. Doesn't take a whole lot of snaps until later on in the game. He can kind of get in the feel for it and everything like that. But at the same time, like, some teams don't even have a Zach Ertz. The Eagles have Zach Ertz and they have Dallas Goedert, as limited as he is. I don't necessarily understand why that would completely nuke your entire play action offense when it's something that was definitely effective for them in this game. I was surprised they didn't go back to it more.
I'm very surprised they didn't use play action more. And like you said, look, that Miami route I was just talking about with Ertz, that was off of play action. They had another play action play where he opens, Wentz does, to his left to throw a swing route, but then you get that little pop release off the line where Ertz chips and then releases into the flat to the left, and that was a big throw. That halfback seam to Sanders, that was off jet motion play action. Mm-hmm. They could have done that more. One of the sacks, interestingly enough, and this was something I did want to bring up, I'm glad you brought this up, Mike. It was a play action play. They had Dallas Goedert in pass protection on the right edge. Now, if he's limited, number one, and one of the things that's a struggle for tight ends coming into this league is the blocking aspect of playing the position. Yeah. I don't think it's a smart move to leave a limited Dallas Goedert on the right edge responsible for one-on-one against a defensive end. Mm. Maybe just period, but especially when he's limited. I thought that was a head-scratcher of a play call. I understand, look, you'd want to it's a two tight end look, two wing tight ends to the right. You want to release Ertz into his route. I get it, but give him some help or do something. Don't leave him one-on-one, especially when he's banged up like he is.
Frustrating from the Eagles in that regard, that they didn't go back to it more. I agree on the Goedert one. Like, I thought, when I saw it initially, I thought Goedert was going to chip and then release.
Chip and release, yeah.
To give his right tackle some help and buy more time for the pocket, but that wasn't the case with that. But either way, I mean, the Eagles got fantastic production out of play action. Would love to see more of that on Thursday against the Packers. So we'll see what they decide. I mean, they ran a bunch of play action last year, so there's no reason they can't go back to it. And like I said, there's no reason a limited Dallas Goedert should prevent you from doing that, because not every team has two starting caliber tight ends. But anyway, Mark, you watched some other guys on Sunday, and maybe we can touch on this briefly, because it's starting to, and it's only one game, and I know he looked good in the preseason, but it's starting to look like Daniel Jones might actually be an NFL quarterback worth reckoning with. Again, only the Bucs. The Bucs. It's the Bucs are bad. The Bucs are a terrible team. We understand that. But for what he could have done, for what he was asked to do in that game, he performed pretty well.
He performed extremely well. And what's fascinating, talking about Carson Wentz and facing pressure and things like that, Jones was pressured on, there's some PFF numbers that got tweeted out from Pat Thorman and Scott Barrett. Daniel Jones was under pressure on 47% of his dropbacks, which is the third highest of week three. Goodness. He completed, here we go, 80% of pressured attempts for 233 yards, two touchdowns, and a perfect 158.3 passer rated.
Holy.
Now,
he did have the fumble, but holy crap, dude.
Yeah, we'll get to the ball security in a second, but that's the fourth most pressured passing yards by any quarterback in any regular season game in PFF history, which covers 2007 to 2019. That's not a small sample size. And over that span, Mike, there are 1,674 instances of a quarterback attempting at least 12 pressured pass attempts in a game. Jones is the first to record a perfect passer rated. He's it. He's the list.
Historic. Wow.
A historic debut from Daniel Jones, whom the gentle listeners remember, I crushed the Giants when they made that pick.
Same.
Crushed them. Yeah. I mean, a lot. Everybody did. Everybody did. Now, partly it was because they could have drafted a quarterback last year. Mm. So it gets it into that running backs don't matter sort of realm of Saquon Barkley. Why would you do that?
Yeah.
Partly because, look, Daniel Jones, sixth overall. I feel like everybody, myself, yourself included, thought that's just too early for this kid, period.
Yeah.
Like, if you want to do it late first round, like, fine, I get it. Second round, probably the sweet spot for his value, but that's a little bit rich. He's performed extremely well preseason, yesterday, and he is an example of why play action matters. Play action is a cheat code. They couldn't run the ball yesterday. Barkley was hurt. They come out without Barkley on the field. The first play of the second half, a play action look, a crosser to Evan Engram, 75 yards to the house. They couldn't run the ball, but they could still throw off of play action. So if you're looking to put together a game plan, by Jeeves, have some play action in there because it is an absolute cheat code, even if you cannot run the football.
Yeah, just another piece to throw on top of the mountain of evidence that says you don't need an elite running back. You don't need an elite running game. You don't need 4 to 5 yards per carry established. You can run play action no matter what, especially if you're going up against Nate Gary. But that's a whole different discussion for the Eagles. I put that up on Twitter. Nate Gary is just awful at reading play action. Anyway, so a little quick Eagles note for you there. You mentioned the ball security with Daniel Jones. Is that a cause for a concern? Is that something that you saw from his college film that he might need to clean up? Or is that just an instance of he's moving up in the pocket, Shaq Barrett makes a great play?
I think it's more the latter right now. The deeper issue that I want to watch is, now we're doing this, it's Monday early afternoon. You know, we haven't seen the all 22 yet. Were some of these great pressure numbers that we're seeing from him, the ability to make throws from crowded pockets, are those creations of his own mind,
right,
in a sense? Because if he's got routes that are breaking open and he's not throwing them and he's then inviting this pressure in a sense, though, that's a bigger area of concern. If it's a situation where, look, routes are covered and he's just sort of buying time to create, sometimes the ball's going to get knocked out of your hands. You might need to work on keeping that offhand on the ball. Andrew Luck was incredible at that. Mm. But if it's just a situation where guys are covered and he's extended with his feet and slided and moving and the ball gets knocked out, I'm fine with it. But if it's a situation where routes are open and he's not trusted his eyes yet, that's obviously something he'll need to work on anyways, a young quarterback. But that might be something that maybe takes a little bit of the shine off his performance if we get into the film where we're like, man, he's got guys running wide open and he's not pulling the trigger.
Yeah. I mean,
why are we here, you know?
Yeah, without the all 22, we are in fact blind. So none of what we said about any of these week three performances matters.
Yes, just throw it all out the window. We don't know what we're talking about. Well, we don't know what we're talking about anyway, but that's why the gentle listeners love us.
So thank you, Mark, for joining me on this abbreviated week so we could get this show in early and preview some Aaron Rodgers against the Eagles. Also, of course, talk some Carson Wentz and some other NFC quarterbacks here on the QB SCO show. That's going to do it for us today. Remember, smash the subscribe button if you want to continue getting this fantastic content. Leave 5 stars, leave a funny review, follow all of us on Twitter, follow at @BGN_radio to get notified when these shows are dropping into your feed. And we will catch you next time here on the QB SCO show.
The Current podcast is back with an exciting new season featuring marketing executives from the world's most influential brands. Tune in to hear what's driving conversation in the fast-moving world of digital advertising with unique insights from brands as diverse as Hilton, Instacart, Moderna, Major League Soccer, and more. And in this presidential election season, The Current explores what a national political advertiser like the National Republican Senatorial Committee and a major CPG brand like Hershey can learn from each other. Listen in and subscribe to The Current at thecurrent.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Support for this show comes from Vanta. Dealing with loads of spreadsheets, juggling different tools, and having to do manual security checks, it can be a headache to keep up with today's compliance and security programs. Vanta is the trust management platform that wants to simplify things and bring all your trust-building efforts under one roof, making growth smoother for your whole organization. Vanta lets you automate up to 90% of compliance for SOC 2, ISO 27001, HIPAA, and more, strengthen security posture, and reduce third-party risk. Get $1,000 off Vanta when you go to vanta.com/vox. That's VANTA.com/Vox for $1,000 off Vanta.